All right, we're live. Welcome, everyone to Gary Goodnell. Yes, I'm here with Grady Newman from Resi. We're at the AIM conference here in lovely Huntington Beach, put on by the Joshua Tree folks, and it's been a great show so far. What do you think?
Absolutely. Every year.
Every year. It's my first time. You guys have been here lots?
This is my third.
Oh, so wow.
Still
wow.
Relatively.
Excellent.
Newbie.
Well, we're fortunate enough that you guys have a suite, so we're able to come into the suite for the conversation. Last show I did, I was at ILS. It was a BTR show. And we got bounced in the conference room, like right to the last second of the show. So that was made for some entertaining conversation. I got to go. All right. So everyone listening to the show and on the podcast, Getting to Hell Yes, we talk about the buyer's journey and just seeking to understand how sellers connect and match up with buyers that are seeking to solve problems. You know, as always, we try and focus a ton on the problem that the buyer is trying to solve, how they articulate the problem, any objections you might hear along the way. Talk about the time wall, like, you know, the things that they have to address by a certain time. And any other things that kind of float along the way. This is brought to you by IRCX. IRCX, we're a remote maintenance software, saving you see it, solve it, close it. So saving you the trip and saving you the triage headaches that come with conventional maintenance solutions. If you're listening, we'd love to get any questions along the way on the live show. And if you are listening to this after the live show, punch in your questions. We'll both get a notification and we'll jump on it to answer some questions. So, as you always start the show off, Grady, like, tell us a little about yourself. How did you get in this role? Why did you decide to start having marketing in multifamily? And what's the problem that you solve for these guys, for your buyers?
Certainly. Well, thanks for having me today. My background is long and storied, but I grew up around multifamily. I'm one of the few I'd say that is here intentionally. I wanted to be in multifamily.
That is the first person. I'm not shitting you. Like, I've never. Everyone else is a journey.
Yeah,
but that's outstanding.
So my father was a developer and had a property management company back in Minneapolis in the 70s and 80s, and
right.
So I kind of just grew up with it in my blood. And always admired how he created value and learned those lessons from an early age.
Outstanding.
So naturally, when I got out of school, I, you know, wanted to do something, learn about the business more, and then pretty quickly, you know, wanted to go build something of my own.
There you go.
And so my first foray into a new business was an energy efficiency, renewable energy consultancy.
We were
working, focused on how do we create value and NOI for properties by improving their bills. And lowering those costs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, found some great successes along the way. But after a number of years of banging my head against the wall, trying to get private owners to spend money on solutions that were still pretty new to them.
Yeah.
You know, we had some 30% IRR projects that we were getting no's to. And I'm like, where else are you spending your money today?
Yep.
Right. We should have been talking about this buyer journey back in 2011. Well, it would have been helpful to me.
No, interesting conversation, right? I was doing a board meeting the other day, and like the conversation of just because it's a problem doesn't mean it's a priority.
Right.
So
the priority there was keep the business alive, make it to another day.
Yeah.
It was just the mindset that most owners were in at that time. So even though we found ways to bring the money, we found ways to guarantee the energy savings, leaving them with no risk whatsoever,
yeah,
and an investment in their own assets, we were still getting no's. And I got really frustrated after a while. I said, you know what? I'm really passionate about this. I love that ability to create value that way, but I'll come back to it when I might be able to be a decision maker.
Yeah.
Or take another stab at it when the market's a little bit, you know, further along.
Yeah. To solve that problem. Right?
Exactly. So ended up pivoting. I made a lot of relationships along the way. I had some good friends in the space and went back to them and say, you know, can I build you some websites? It's something that I'd always been just passionate about. I was a comp sci guy and you know, always passionate about how things work. So I'd learned how to build some websites, and I've been doing so for my family's business for a couple of years, and said, let me give this a try. And
very cool.
So started there and immediately moved into all aspects of marketing for some of my friends in their lease-ups, and found success in marketing new lease-up properties, or when it was just a hole in the ground, how do I help generate traffic here? And so I was doing everything from flying the drone around an empty property to DJing opening parties to interviewing
That's
local
awesome.
Shop owners for blog content,
yeah,
and you know, really dug in as to how do we help generate interest in this property. And over the years, found how to be successful in that. Found it a lot easier to sell a website with no promise of a return and no guaranteed anything than I ever did with these savings projects. And I think it had something to do with this, where the dollars come in the door.
That's right.
So higher up on that priority list.
Well, without a doubt. I mean, like, we sell a cost saving solution. The conversations that we have, like, around, like, we find ourselves more and more attaching ourselves to revenue just to inch way up the priority scale, mm-hmm. right? And depending on who you're talking to, you know, the conversation around revenue has a natural, you know, element that you got to act on, right? Because like every day is a missed dollar.
Right.
You know?
But to me, it's also a little bit backwards because sometimes you have to earn $4 to versus saving one, yep. which is more valuable to go.
Well, I mean, there's a long conversation about that, right? And in addition to the fact that if you start saving money, you're putting cash right in your jeans rather than speculative. But mm-hmm. again, it's psychological.
Right.
You can do whatever you want, but you cannot make them do what you want them to do.
Well, either way, I poured my heart into it and, you know, learned how to get pretty good at it and have, you know, ended up growing our little portfolio of properties that we helped with marketing to, mm-hmm. you know, 40 or 50. And once we got to that scale, I said, man, does not make sense anymore for us to log into the back of every website to make every single update. So that's when really the concept of Resi as it's in its current shape was born in about 2018 is when we created the first iteration.
Right.
And it was just an ability to update specials mm-hmm. from a centralized platform. And we said, okay, wow, this saved a ton of time and a ton of energy. And we were able to move and make those updates much quicker. And all of a sudden we said, all right, well, let's move more of the content mm-hmm. into the system. And that's then iterated into what we have today, which is really a centralized marketing platform for multifamily teams.
And so is it a templatized approach? Like you have products, like it's like t-shirt sizes, or how does it all come together?
Certainly. So we've, you know, really honed in what we focus on as a core. So our agency side provides websites, provides digital advertising mm-hmm. and SEO services. Our core product per se would be on the website side. Mm-hmm. We don't really, template's a naughty word in our company.
So, apologies. Yeah.
Right. And it's mostly because it evokes a sense of restrictiveness.
Okay.
And that's something that we really focused on how to, you know, remove is how to create a really flexible tool so that you can differentiate your property, talk about and really adapt each web presence to the audience that you're trying to speak to, mm-hmm. to the market that you're in, and highlight the aspects of your property that are going to really help sell it, to turn your website into not just another listing or brochure, but actually like an active tool. And so anyway, I have found some success with that, branched out of the Minnesota area where I was born into, and have now been expanding across the country and been lucky and fortunate enough to work with some really great folks along the way.
Outstanding. Like when you solve that problem around like positioning, pricing, like marketing, all those things, like how do you find folks that are seeking to differentiate from the WordPress stand it up, you know, kind of like website in 60 minutes kind of thing? Like this is a different game. Why are they looking to depart from free?
Well, mostly the groups that are utilizing the templated approach are mm-hmm. not on WordPress. They're on a PMS provided template or something that's been bundled in with their other tools.
Okay.
And so WordPress is actually the state of freedom that I often recommend many seek.
Okay.
Once you have more full ownership of that tool, you can then create anything that you want.
Right.
And I think that's so vital for companies today. We have, you know, so many different places online that we have a presence. This is the only place that you want to give yourself the option to fully control how mm-hmm. you're presented. This is the last stop to give all the details and information that you want about your property. And so how do we get people ready for making that? Mm-hmm. That's a tough conversation to have because mm-hmm. it's bundled in so many cases, it's really hard to unravel and convince them that this can be unraveled, you know, but there are, when we found ways of unraveling it, we're often finding that in most cases, they're spending quite a bit more through some of those tools than they are.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. So like the perception that it's being bundled and included in their existing per unit fees, but there's really, if you peel it back, there's actually a website fee in there that they can.
It's a perception, or they're going to, you know, move that charge into something else. It's the danger of having a, you know, a full ecosystem of services that at least has a perception of being one.
It's interesting. You know, I had this conversation more than once in terms of like unbundling the PMS, right? And like I had it with Shiv just a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. talking about like the system of record versus system of engagement. And the premise there is that they should stick to being systems of record and innovate in that sense versus trying to replicate or force systems of engagement solutions onto their customers because they're not really good at it. And so like that's the thing that I didn't even think through, that a website presence could be something that's part of the bundle that comes out of PMS.
Yeah, like should your accounting system dictate how you're presenting yourself to your...
No, it's not good at it.
Renters.
No, I mean, the conversation we had with Shiv was like around this, certain things are supposed to move slow. And that's like your accounting system. It's not supposed to be reactive and fast. It's supposed to be reliable, trustworthy, dependable, you know, all those things, provide your month-end reporting, be auditable, everything like that. And that's almost the exact opposite of what you want your website to be.
And that's exactly why I ended up doing websites.
Yeah.
As I looked at all of the 80 plus, I don't even know how many modules there are. I think something around that for some of these PMSs. I looked at where is an area that I know pretty well, that I know that we can stay ahead of the curve on, and something that moves fast. And that's in the marketing side. Mm-hmm. And on the web, we have technology moving at lightning speed compared to many other aspects of our industry. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we ended up, a big reason why we ended up where we are today.
Interesting kind of like thread there, though. When you talk about that, so something's bundled with PMS, like there's presumably some pre-existing integration, better or for worse, into that PMS system. And I'm guessing when you guys first started, you have those questions like there, because folks that have a pre-existing website-based PMS or PMS-based website are going to have been coached that integration with the website and the PMS is vital or critical. And so, you know, whatever you choose, it should be integrated. Like, do you see those kind of objections as you're kind of like ramping up?
Into fully. I mean, and that's, you know, an objection anybody would have today if that wasn't a, you know, a solution that we had in place. Is this going to, you know, is this going to be integrated with my with my real-time pricing and availability? And of course, those are the basics that we have to cover. That's table stakes today if you're going to be able to provide a, you know, an enhanced website solution. But really, most of those companies didn't build their solution natively.
Right.
More often than not, they were by acquiring some other tool that's been, you know, a little bit strapped together. And I'll just be frank, it's hard enough to build a single tool with a set of developers and make that seamless. When you start adding in code that was developed in different generations with different teams, with different parts from different parts of the world, you end up with, it's a mess. It's a lot to handle. I'm really blown away at their ability to even make happen what they do as it is. It's a lot to make.
Well, it's even harder in public cloud architecture, right?
Yeah.
Like public cloud SaaS architecture is kind of designed for scalability within the confines of that particular dev stack.
Right.
But then you go integrate that with another publicly cloud, and you're better off connecting with just like API connections.
Right.
Versus actually formally bringing a code over.
Which is, I think, in many cases, how they mostly operate and have put together just a kind of a framework that makes it look more seamless.
Yeah.
But we can integrate just as seamlessly with them. And we've started to see more improvements in that API infrastructure today, as I think that it's been pretty much demanded by the industry that we see some improvements.
Yeah, the common data model that's come up in the Red Sea. I think, who did that? It was
The Mitz?
Red Sea put one out, and I was just chatting with the guys at, who did it? I can't remember. I'll forget. Nonetheless, but the I found it interesting though, like you'd go through these conversations. So when you're developing and you're growing your business, you can't integrate with everybody on like in the year one. So how did you establish your roadmap as to where you were going to integrate? And how did that impact your go-to-market?
Well, that's a great question. It very much impacted it. So we started out and some of my friends were RealPage users. So that was the first integration we built. And after going through that, I said, whew.
Yeah,
I don't want to try to do that again. So we're going to go find other RealPage users.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we did for the first few years. Is just only targeted other RealPage users. Thankfully, I found many of the other integrations later on to be a little bit easier than that first one was. Ripping the Band-Aid off, but developing a universal tool is really hard. You know, to create that abstract model that's going to that work within any of those systems. It's a challenge. And so it's always a lens that we're looking through when we are building those integrations, whether they be through an input of data from a PMS or an output of data to CRMs. Being able to have that universal model is one that takes a lot of thought and consideration.
So an interesting kind of like point then there is that if you are considering a website or, you know, your resident facing or prospect facing storefront and integrations into your PMS is important, WordPress isn't going to cut it. You can't just go stand up, you know, the alternative to free is like, I'm going to stand it up with somebody from, you know, from a gig worker to build me a website. And that's going to be my boom. But what you're talking about is you want, or what I've heard is that when you want to get into an advanced, like if you don't want to leave money on the table and you want to be able to have advanced pricing mechanisms, you do have to have integration with your backend. So you got where, what inventory is available, et cetera.
Of course. Yeah. Huh. And
is it is that kind of like considered like a Shopify for property management? Is that
very much so?
Yeah,
exactly. And you know, that's a word that we use a lot to describe a way to describe what we've been building. Mm-hmm. And that's where we started, was pulling that data from RealPage directly into the back end of WordPress, into the WordPress database. And I will say, while we found a way to make it work, then that is not an optimal setup.
Yeah.
These are not like modern APIs that can be fully depended on. Yeah. They break, information is wrong. So
they change them without telling you?
All the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
The documentation isn't stellar. So building that that middleware, which is really kind of what we exist as today, was mm-hmm. really essential both for having that consistency and redundancy and an ability to like add much more like detailed information to your to the data that we're already pulling from.
So then the problem that you solve expands to just presenting the website and marketing the building. It's the integration to your whole cache. I'll say quote cache, right? So being able to actually go from here, we've got an estimate, an interested buyer. We're going to create a quote on that, and price it out, mm-hmm. give them an offer. They're going to close on an offer, and that's going to go integrate back in the whole system. That's a different problem than just putting up a brochure.
It is. And being able to tackle that online application piece is something that we have not dove into mm-hmm. yet, because that's just a little further down the resident journey. We've been trying to really dive deep into the areas that we have built out infrastructure. And we're just going to be taking on pieces at a time. And how do we integrate well into mm-hmm. those steps until we can take a stab at adding value to that pieces. Ourselves? But that's absolutely of interest in our roadmap.
Well, there's certainly a lot of like already pre-allocated budget to solve those problems, right? Like particularly the creditworthiness stuff. There's all the different pieces of the applicant lifecycle. Yeah, there's a lot of fruit in that tree.
And I have no desire to go rebuild something that somebody else has already tackled. We have enough problems to solve in this industry.
Yeah.
So like our approach is generally one of like, let's play nice together in the sandbox here. Yeah. And like, I'd much rather find a way to integrate those solutions that have already been developed into a process that's going to benefit our mutual clients.
So we're finding that right now, as even some of our conversations, we've got one play where the customer has brought two of us together to have the conversation about what they can't get solved with the conventional alternatives. Mm-hmm. And that's, both myself and the partner, we're both kind of like, okay, we get the roadmap here. We see the problem. Like we understand this, and there's a bit of a commitment between the both of us and this prospect to say, okay, so, if you are committing to solving that problem, we're committing to solving it with you, and understand there's gonna be a roadmap to that we're gonna have to do a bit of like, it's gonna take some steps, mm-hmm. but the payoff for that prospect is that they're able to influence what that common solution looks like versus accepting what the uncommon solution is right now. And so they're excited about that. So we'll see how that plays out. But it does create a little bit more work for us, because you have the fear that is our tech roadmap all of a sudden get commandeered by a prospect that is independent of what everyone else is looking to solve. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit of like, let's see what the market's talking about. And what's interesting is we've had like probably three or four other conversations of the similar nature, saying, hey, the current solutions that are available today to solve this problem in our business don't work at all. They're not mature enough, fast enough, quick enough, detailed enough. So it's costing us money. So we're actually both kind of like talking to these two, well, hey, I know a buddy, we're working on a partnership for this sort of thing, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Right? It's interesting to your comment in terms of like, there are solutions that are out there, and the temptation is to try and get more of the wallet, but you can get more of the wallet by going deeper versus getting broader, because broader is exhausting.
There's always broader.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but then you're up and competing against many other solutions, and there's just becomes this overlap. There's mm-hmm. so much overlap everywhere. And I think that's, a lot of the problem that we have today is we have so many tools with so much overlap. Yeah. And then a lack of training in depth that you like to demonstrate to your client, here's how to get the most value out of our system, and like really diving deep and understanding. So you're talking about like a strategic partnership and how to like build a system like that. We spend a lot of time talking about this stuff as a team. When you're looking at creating those solutions, it's not how do we just meet this one need of this client, but how do we abstract that and create a little bit more of a universal mm-hmm. approach here, and think about what other things that other providers are going to are going to need. And then not just thinking about them and hypothesizing about them, but going and talking to them mm-hmm. and getting feedback on your system. I feel like that a lot of this industry ends up being, they're funded mm-hmm. externally, ends up having a lot of sales goals. So they have timelines that they need sure. to be able to hit those. And so you end up sometimes with solutions that are just a little bit short-sighted, because they don't have the flexibility and the time horizon to go through and and get all of those inputs before they're building mm-hmm. their solution and throwing it out to you as a, we have your problem solved.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why we end up with
it's a solution baked for somebody, for one customer, not all the customers.
Right, and it's gonna get you 80% of the way there or 90%, but it's that last 10 to 20 that it creates all the pain.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, definitely. And then what becomes difficult is you know what might be perceived as lightning in a bottle, but making that and replicating that over and over again with a repeatable use case, right? So going to market with a problem. You know, and making sure that you're hearing evidence of that problem trying to be solved. And it's kind of interesting. Like you talked about how your WordPress data, where you're downloading it and then you're bringing it back into the WordPress database from RealPage. And like that workaround is evidence that the problem needed to be solved, right? Mm-hmm. So we double click a lot on what people are doing for workarounds. Some of them are like flat out like risky. Like, you know, like as an example in our business, like using FaceTime or WhatsApp, it's like, that's just risky. Like, just so you know, and here's why. Boom, boom, boom. They go, oh, I didn't even think about that. You know, wouldn't even know. Texting images on a personal cell phone, super risky, right? Especially in a business with 90% turnover. Like, don't do that. Please don't do that. Don't ever do it again. And like, but making them aware of the workload and the risk of, and the workarounds that may be existing in their, at whatever, you know, also at the site level or at the marketing level, you know, like just think about even like the managing of personal data mm-hmm. in your business, right? Or in your side of the business. Like, that is crazy, right? And the general, I don't want to, I'm hazard to use the word sloppy because it's not fair, but I think it's just there's lack of an understanding of how to treat private information in most businesses, and especially given that you guys are managing consumer information that has personal PII on it. Like, how does that lens even surface in conversations? Like, do you make a point of educating people on that? Is that something you solve? Like, all those things?
I've purposely stayed at arm's length from PII for a long time with that exact thought in mind, that this is liability for us, yeah. and that I'm going to steer clear from it until I can add enough value to that equation to justify taking on that liability and the education that's going to be involved and making sure that we have proper protocols mm-hmm. and everything in place to handle it. Because it's not something that should be taken lightly in any way.
I find it hilarious. I mean, I don't know if your side of the world, but we have to be SOC 2 compliant. And like, I find it really ironic that we need to be SOC 2 compliant as vendors to this business, but they do not have to be SOC 2 compliant. And myself, that kind of like makes me throw up a little bit. Because if you had any idea how hard it is to be SOC 2 compliant on the regular, like as
there's a reason I've avoided having to go to.
But it's like, oh my gosh, like how do you guys actually even? So I think that's kind of ironic. But yeah, we have to do that because we've got utilities customers and the traded customers. But it's like, yeah, the compliance pieces around handling data is another one of those problems that people don't know that need to be solved, right? And then how that's managed, especially with some of the new laws here in California, like it's just changing. And the resident / the public has more power than ever before. Interesting conversation today about the FTC, how they're managing how reviews are managed, mm-hmm. right? And so that's changing the game as well by trying to level out like some of the things that people have been doing to be perceived as being a trustworthy brand. And so all of that is kind of like not necessarily considered when you're thinking about your alternatives of building a website, right? So I got a building on a hole in the ground, you know how you described it. I'm going to put a website together to be able to market and position it and sell it, pre-sell it. But then ultimately, like I've got to understand what the implications of that. What happens when someone chooses to buy, right? Or when a resident signs a contract, like what happens next? And that just doesn't come through when you consider the alternatives of building a website. So do you guys go work it hard at making sure people understand that and know that?
And a great deal. I mean, we have our own like privacy laws and everything that we need to follow mm-hmm. when it comes to, you know, advertising and mm-hmm. how we're using the user data. And, you know, we do as much education as possible, but like ultimately it's on the onus of the company to mm-hmm. make sure that they're and that's hard enough. Marketing teams are already so underfunded and under-resourced today that taking that time to have that deep understanding just doesn't in most cases exist. And that you oftentimes are really at the whim of an owner who's just saying, I need more leases and I need to fill up my building. I don't really care about all of these details.
Yes. So when you guys are going to the market, great segue, when you're going to market, like, are you marketing to the, I mean, our aim here, and it's full of operator managers and owners, I mean, are you targeting, where do you find your fastest deals? Is it the owner side or the manager side?
Generally, the owner side has been where most of our business has come from. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially considering we started very much so with developers.
Yeah.
We found it a lot easier to build a website for somebody who didn't have one yet.
Sure.
Yeah. So, thinking about our go-to-market
agency, right? Because a lot of the managers of agencies now.
Mm-hmm. And, most of our clients have been owners and now we started to move into more third-party operators. Mm-hmm. And especially as we've started to make some shifts in our approach to the market, mm-hmm. And moving a little bit away from being agency driven, mm-hmm. to taking now the tools that we've built and marketing those,
and
like, here's a solution for you as an internal agency, or here's, mm-hmm. a solution for you as an external agency. Like, we really dove deep in how to build websites, mm-hmm. really flexibly, make them work and integrate really well with all of these tools. We've got these problems solved so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
And
yeah. Do you know about these problems? Right? Are you even considering them? Have you thought about that when you're looking at your alternatives?
Huh. Yeah, many have not, and or just haven't come across the customers where they need to yet.
Right.
And then end up having to tackle those solutions quickly and or overpromising with, sure, we can get that integration, mm-hmm. put together quickly.
Right,
and
it
takes a lot longer than one might think to do it well.
Yeah. So when you get to take a look at like your market, who's the faster buyer? Like, this is kind of the hell yes conversation.
Yeah.
Is it, you spoke about the developer side of things, and there's obviously, buildings that are kind of market rate out there, like market rate and operating and leasing. Like, are you looking for things that are pre-con, or are they like, they're built and leasing up? Like, if you could pick the market and paint the market exactly the way you want it, what would you chase?
That is shifting.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. In our previous years, we would chase new development.
Mm-hmm.
They've got slightly larger marketing budgets because they know they got to lease up their whole property.
Yep, and it's capital, not ops.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So it's coming from a different budget.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I would paint the market with.
Hmm.
But now as we are moving more into a SaaS play, really our ICP shifts, and some of those that might have been not great looking customers to us because we'd have to go through and sell ownership by ownership group amongst third party providers. Now we're looking at them and saying, well, hey, you guys have an internal agency, and now we can, now we have a single sales point.
Right.
For a larger portfolio.
Right. And that's interesting. It's something that we're kind of like learning a little bit about. We had one third party. They're direct. They're like, okay, here's a list of customers. Go sell them first and then we'll implement it. Right. And I was like, that's pretty fair.
Yeah.
Versus us expecting them to go sell on our behalf. Right. I was chatting with them today. I was like, I really appreciate the transparency around that versus stringing us along and then us asking you to do our selling for us.
Yeah, like they just hold the keys to the,
yeah.
the kingdom and
yeah.
ultimately like
and
have
so
to put in all the work.
We've got another even deal that went to proposal this morning, and the same story. It's basically we met the owner at a conference, and the owner said, "We'll talk to our manager." Talk to them. So that they had 1,000 units, and the manager manages 20,000 units, right? And so the owner directed us to the intro that they're willing to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
The manager, 20,000 units, they're like, this is a pretty good idea. We're thinking we'd like to deploy it across all 20,000 units. So my deal went from like 1,000 units to 20,000 units by virtue of just the way that these systems all work out. And then maybe, hopefully, fingers crossed, those 20,000 units that they're running, some of those are by other owners that have managed other management groups,
yeah.
that will love the experience and then push that out. And so it's kind of like this web of relationships that need to be managed in this business,
mm-hmm.
and you can feel the tip happen where once you get past 100%. Some of those barriers, it's hard to get everybody coordinated. But once, because like you're selling, it's not a two-sided marketplace. You've got two buyers that have like that have relationships that are end to end. And so then if I can go and tip part of that, then that creates the bowling pin experience of momentum and in that sales motion. And so you can see how you, as a company, the second you can cross that threshold and have that kinetic motion of the bowling pins knocking down, these are going really fast, because like this business needs some help right now. And I mean, a curious, good segue is like, when you were looking at growing the business through the ZIRP era, like what was the problem that they were trying to solve then? Like going back 3 years.
Yeah.
Like why were they buying?
Why were they buying our software?
Yeah.
Back 3 years ago, it's really I mean, the problems haven't really changed.
They haven't? Okay.
I've noticed. I mean, we, like, underlying, you had the market change.
Yep.
Right? And you had more near term. I mean, I guess in 21, like, market's going up and think people are buying like crazy and they need to move fast. And so we had people that just like, hey, I've got a new acquisition, I need to get this live. And, you know, we have a lot of movement that way. But one thing I've noticed about like where we sit is like we do well in upswings in the market, but some we often do better in downswings because I have to work a little harder to go get those renters.
Well, for sure, right? And you can't just put up a, like, it literally was like, you know, you could put up a shingle and all of a sudden sell out in like 21, but not anymore.
No,
right?
It's a different ball game. But at the same time, we have had some of the like lowest amount of new construction in the last year, year and a half. And so, like, we'll see that demand curve shift again.
But there is a lot coming online, like maybe not new shovels in ground, but there's a lot of lease up. There's a lot of build. There'll be a lot of lease ups this, at least the next 18 months, like the 500,000 units coming online or something like that this year.
Maybe. Something it started to tip down. And in some markets, it's the lowest amount of new units hitting, you know, in a long time. And, you know, in a time where we need crazy amounts of housing.
Yeah.
That's the thing I was just looking at. I think it was maybe Chicago. Like, hundreds of units come online in 25.
Hundreds.
Yeah. Hundreds.
That's crazy.
And my mind was blown.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
One of the biggest, is the second biggest TV audience in the US, I think. I just know the TV audience piece, but I don't know how big the population is, but
large. So it's,
and you got 35,000 coming online in Austin.
And Texas is its own beast.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. Hundreds.
Hundreds.
This doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, we have a, you know, no shortage of population growth.
No, yeah.
And
and urbanization, right? So, like, you look at the multifamily solutions to be able to create housing for people. I mean, I think that, like, I've got a, my kids are in there. My oldest is 21, just finished. He's a junior. And then my daughter just started. She's a freshman. And my youngest is in high school. But, like, they're, like, the feeling of a person who's about to graduate college is that I don't think I'll ever be able to buy a house, which is kind of sad. But that's like the, or that's kind of like the feeling at a college level. And so if that's the case, okay, so what are they going to do? They're going to rent. Okay. So what's rental look like? How is that going to satisfy the different stages of people's life cycle of life stages? Right. And I mean, obviously I hope they are able to fulfill their dreams. I don't know what those dreams are, but, you know, we were told in my generation that home ownership was the dream.
Right,
that was the bundle, and it's not a great deal right now, but it's certainly, you got to live somewhere, you know. And so I don't know, it's interesting. Like,
yeah,
especially,
I mean, I grew up in Minnesota. The Minnesota dream was I want a house, I want a car, and I want a yard, and I want a cabin up north.
Yeah, 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 for sure, and a sled.
That's right,
of course, and a sled. An ice shack. I know that. So then when you're taking a look at those, like, so when someone's, so, you know, looking to solve the problem, like your buyers, the owners, like, do they typically have a marketing person who's then seeking to solve the problem around, okay, I need to lease up this building. I need to continue leasing this building. We need to market. And I'm typing into Google, what am I typing? Like, website for a part, like, what are they typing in? How do they articulate the problem?
Sure. I mean, definitely, like, multifamily marketing websites, multifamily websites is going to help find us today. Mm-hmm. But to really nail down our problem, it's multifamily marketing platform or ecosystem or some way to, like, think about all of their tools in a more connected way. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's been an interesting journey to, like, identify exactly who our buyer is and who to speak to, because oftentimes, like, most marketing roles are either, like, very focused in a particular area of marketing, if you have a large enough team, or you get so dragged down in marketing ops that you don't have an opportunity to really dive deep, because you're really just trying to keep things moving. And so oftentimes it'll come down to a role that gets pulled in to figure out how to pull all these tools together, or it's a leasing operation specialist who can come in with a little bit larger zoomed out perspective on, like, is this really solving our problem? And are we able to put something out there that's really working? Mm-hmm. We get really focused on individual KPIs for individual tools today. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like, don't see how is the team as a whole providing, like, scoring, and how are we winning
the game? Because a leasing agent's converting, but the business is not rolling. That kind of thing.
There may be many things. You could have great traffic coming out of your ILS, but is that converting?
Right, right.
You might have great, you know, chatbot interactions. You might have a great tool or, you know, an AI nurturing system that's really working, but there are so many, like, those are just, that's just one of your players.
Yeah.
That's like having a great O-line or a great receiver or a great quarterback.
Yeah, you know,
like,
caps.
But if you have no defensive line and no defense, like, can you still win a game?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I get you. So then when you take a look at that, this, you know, what you were just kind of hinted on a little bit earlier about this movement to SaaS, movement to platform, what's that mean for you guys?
It means I've been talking about it for a couple of years, and this past year I finally realized, like, to really make this change, I need to not just talk about it, but to make really a change in how we sell, and more importantly, how we operate as a team. So I've begun, for example, to take a good chunk of my design team, who has spent a lot of their time historically building out custom designed websites, something that's used once or potentially gets repeated across a number of properties. Sure. And now have them focusing on the component level, something that's going to be repeated across all sites, and focused on UI development and UX. So, like, more just in repeatable and scalable efforts.
Yeah. And that helps you, as Courtney talks about right here, like, componentize or tailor it versus template it, right? And that repeatability of the commonalities gets you to from like 80% to 95%, and the rest is customization.
Exactly. I mean, it's a lot of, like, let's hone in on the components. Let's hone in on and look at a detail level of exactly how do floor plans get laid out for the ultimate, you know, performance, and what little tweaks can we make there to improve that user journey. And it's, I think, that focus and depth of knowledge and data, this will allow us to actually have much more data-informed design decisions.
I had an interesting conversation here at the conference around New York City, and they're talking about how things run in New York City. And I was like, that is not like any other part of the whole country. Have you sold anybody in New York City?
I've spoken with a number of groups out of New York City, but we have historically stayed away from it because it's just a whole different
beast.
It's
completely different.
Yeah.
It's completely different. Like, what she was an owner manager, and what she was describing, how they run their business. I was like, nobody even has those problems, or no one, like, you don't have problems that other people, like, it's killing their business. But the problems you have, nobody has at all. It was completely different.
Right. They have, I mean, way more common to see centralized leasing operations, centralized marketing operations, centralized everything in New York. Another thing to see is that you'll oftentimes not have leasing and marketing be the same.
Right.
Leasing and property management be the same business.
Huh.
And, like, our client in much of New York would oftentimes be like the third party leasing agency, or, you know, the real estate group brokerage that gets pulled in to lease up a property because they just do things differently there.
Huh. It was good to get that data point, because it's going to help me from a pitch perspective. Like, you kind of know it from, like, TV, but, like, you don't really understand it until they're explaining the details of, like, just how things get moved around, right? So we chatted about this briefly before we kicked off here around the time wall. So time wall conversation is around, like, the compelling event, right? What do they have to do? Like, when you're talking to prospects and they're out there moving themselves down the buyer's journey, how do you reveal what their time wall is? How do you know they need to do something by some point in time?
So the compelling events that we'll see are going to be acquisition, disposition, new development, and or just hitting performance figures that are incredibly subpar.
Yeah.
So, you know, when they get the red flag on a property to say, like, what is going on here? We're at 90% or 87% and haven't been able to, like, bump over that figure for a period of time. That's another one that's going to cue investment and focus into their marketing ops.
Well, then, given the resident churn, like, it's not like you're never really leased up. Like, you're leased up for a moment and then you can convert over or whatever, but you're actually never leased up entirely because you've got 50% churn in, you know, across the country. And so you're always trying to fill that gap.
Right. I will I will oftentimes look for groups that we maybe didn't have a success in, and they chose to go with a templated option early on in their lease up, and earmark them to come back to a year later after they've exhausted their specials to fill up their property, and they're going to have that. You're going to have that same problem over again.
Do you find the market? I mean, we saw this today in the apartment list conversation was around, like, you know, people's considerations for, you know, things that they think about. I think it was roughly like 60% of it was price related, 70% price related. Do you find that the folks out there in the positioning part of marketing, that there is it principally a price market, or are you hearing a lot of, like, this goes back to competing on product innovation, which is kind of like amenities, right? The amenities world, trying to compete with amenities on a pricing problem. And then you have like the service business where you're, you know, like call that luxury or higher end, and or then price. And so given the kind of the problems that your customers are looking to solve around leasing up or renting or, you know, just capacity, how are people looking to differentiate in the market? Well, at least from the knowledge set that you're looking at.
Well, one of the things that we focus on is, I mean, if let's just take amenities for an example. So more often than not, this ends up as a bullet pointed list on a single page of a website, which is not too different than what you're going to see on apartments.com or any other tool.
Right.
So one, like, why list this? Why get, what is the reason for the renter to live on this website and to dive deeper? What's convincing them? And oftentimes I think that that's missing. So one thing that we like to do is say, hey, like, you guys are spending a lot of money on these amenities. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to invest in these, let's make sure that these features are clear. Let's make a really big deal out of something that might be seemingly small.
Yeah, because a gym could be a closet, or it could be a full-on, like, 20,000 square foot facility.
They can vary significantly, right? Yeah. I mean, a company like Apple just does this so well, right? Like, they make the biggest deal out of the smallest little things,
right?
And it's amplify it. What a great hint is go take any of your features, any part of your business, go take one of your favorite pages on your website and throw it through ChatGPT and tell it to replace it using Apple Power Words.
Really?
Yeah, give it a try.
I love that. I'll give that a shot. That's a good one. And so they've got to make a decision by a certain time, and you're looking at basically their schedules to deliver on the capital structures. And how do you filter on, is that you're getting that from ALN, or where do you get the data on the development side of things, or M&A?
Yeah, we've used tools like ALN and others to gather some of that data. You know, but oftentimes we're following teams, following who's doing well, who is investing in their marketing, who's got great positioning here, who has great online reputation that wants to take advantage of their of the tools at hand to showcase those things. You know, I'd be beating my head against the wall if I were just to go after those that clearly don't care and don't invest in their marketing.
Right.
And I'm not here to try to convince somebody to spend dollars on marketing. That's really hard to do.
No, you want to help them.
I mean, and I'll argue for that all day long and talk about the principles of it and why marketing should be looked at as an investment and not an expense, because this is your revenue driver. But ultimately, those are really harder conversations to have, and you have a different audience for that. That's really, in many cases, dictated by your ownership groups, which is then going to come down to what are their investment horizons and what makes sense to them, and is this a long-term hold? Is this a 3 to 5 year flip? Like, what are their goals? And that oftentimes it doesn't make sense for them to make a big investment in marketing if they just are looking to extract some value and get rid of the property in 3 years. So aligning like our efforts with this is oftentimes why we've ended up having a great deal of our customers be long-term owner operators and developers, is because they have that longer period and longer view.
Right. Interesting, because they're not just like doing a turn, right?
Right. I mean, and not to say that we can't drive value for that, because we absolutely can, you know, and it's like the whole point is like in driving that value. And that's a metric that honestly companies should be looking at when they're acquiring a property, is like, what is your leasing like rate?
Right.
And like, how quickly are you filling units? Because that's a function of not just your like leasing efforts, but a function of like, how well is your property positioned in the market? Like,
right.
How do people think of you?
Like when people buy you guys, like, do you commit to an ROI and a timeline, or is it like, here's how we're going to make it better? Like, how does it feel like to be a customer?
I mean, so definitely people are expecting those ROI discussions when we're looking at like, especially digital ad services, you know, and they want to see an ROI on those types of investments. Websites are a little less focused on that immediate ROI and a bigger impact really on your entire like renter journey. So like, you know, those are conversations that many want to, they want to have that information. Mm-hmm. But part of our conversation and sales point is like, hey, if you're going to get completely focused on an ROI, then you're going to be focused on your KPIs. So that means that we're going to build a website that's going to drive those KPIs. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put your biggest call to actions. And at some point, if I want to drive those figures up, I'm just going to put one giant schedule a tour button on the front page and not give them any other options. I promise you, you'll get more leads. You'll get more traffic. But is that ultimately solving your problem? Then you're going to just be driving more leads to your property. You're going to keep your team extremely busy and exhausted. They're going to get frustrated because their conversion numbers are going to plummet. You're going to have more turnover in the property than you already have.
Interesting.
And ultimately, that doesn't solve the problem. So our focus really becomes in how do we turn this into a tool to improve the quality of leads? So you're going to look at the ROI of your website by looking at what kind of conversion figures, mm-hmm. what kind of improvement are we getting in our conversion rates? And that's really how I ask our clients, our customers, to judge our performance.
When a lot of the conversations I've had the last couple of days have been around the renewal side of things and retention. Do you guys solve that? Like, is there an internal portal that you guys deliver as well, like for resident engagement, or is it
not yet?
Not yet. Okay.
Maybe someday.
Still from a conversion perspective, like we said earlier, do what you do, do it really well, do that best, and then see where the market pulls you. Right? Is there a big market for internal resident portals? Like resident, like not so much. I mean, there's the maintenance one that everyone talks about and hates, but like, and not that one, all of them, but like the. What else would you do as a resident to engage with through a website?
But through, you know, I'm a big fan of all the resident engagement apps, and there are, a great number of them out there all doing really great work. And to me, that's a really core piece in improving one of your most important metrics, which is, mm-hmm. you know, how much retention do you have on site? Because it's all about building community. You want to mm-hmm. give people a reason to stay at a property. Mm-hmm. And there is no better reason than I've developed a sense of community. I have relationships here.
One of the things that we've been talking quite a lot about, and I kept this with Conrad from Elevate OS, we're talking about, he's a beauty. we're just talking about like, you know, how do we go out there and remove the pain? Like instead of like, it's the ones and the twos that are killing you, not the five, not the fives will come, but the ones and the twos can really drag down your star ratings, right? And so thinking about the floor of the resident experience. So his great example was like, you know, they consolidate a bunch of your different apps into a single login experience. And that's, you know, not only what they do, but one of the things of having all of your access control, having all that stuff in a single experience so that you can, you don't have to, it's not, you have to keep track of everything because it's too much of a headache. So is that what that is now? Is that what the internal resident portal business is? Like what Elevate does?
Partially. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's connecting all the tools that you use while you live, and it's about and having a tool to help you like build community is mm-hmm. ultimately what I think that those serve as. And I mean, in terms of attacking the ones and twos, something that I've learned from other industries that I've operated in is that ultimately people just want to be heard.
Yeah.
And that oftentimes we seem to be like very squeamish around like, how do I get rid of these reviews? Like I wouldn't look at them as opportunities to build your business and to improve your business. And I feel like so often they just are things that people want to avoid. And that, we found in other businesses, the more that we lean into mm-hmm. the ratings that aren't great, the more that we show that we listen and demonstrate like, look, we heard mm-hmm. you, we've made this improvement. That's ultimately what clients want to see. And what that means that you need to connect all of those dots.
Yeah.
Who's reading this review? Who's communicating this?
Yeah.
Who is moving this over to a decision maker that can create the budget or the movement emotionally necessary in a business to make that change happen? And you know that gets lost sometimes in a complicated structure of property management, on-site leasing, mm-hmm. and you know, many teams. I think it's really important to have that connective tissue so that you can move those parts and you can tell that's where operators are going to make their difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's certainly the ones, the twos are they're your a resident, they're your customer, like getting so frustrated with an outcome that they're just shouting. And if you don't listen to that and take that as a lesson, you're destined to repeat it. Right. And you can't just ignore it because they've found a platform. There's a platform where they can voice their concerns. And so it's, I like your point. I don't know if you'll look at it that way, that you should be able to be taking those ones and twos and embracing them because like they care enough to say, this isn't working for me. Like, they're putting their hand up and saying, this is not what I bought.
Right.
And so you should be aware of that so that you can react to that and make sure that there's not any more of those that are happening. Because if it's one person that's saying it, there's probably 10 that are experiencing it.
More than likely, yes.
And then when we talk about the leaky bucket, like the things that we try and prevent around the retention side of things is by raising the floor on the maintenance experience so that as a marketer, you're not trying to constantly fill that leaky bucket. Because it's like, there's just no energy. It's a bottomless pit of energy suck, of trying to battle up against ones and twos. Mm-hmm. And so, it's interesting to try and consider taking those ones and twos as opportunities to mitigate something that's not working. Interesting. When you guys are out there pitching, and we talked about the free website or the basic stuff, like what other things are they considered before they go and choose a marketing platform?
Really great question. I mean, normally we've got a lot of point solutions that marketers Sure. are looking at and that they're not as concerned with the whole. I think we're starting to see a lot more conversations happen in a more holistic manner. Mm-hmm. As we see new roles developed in some larger operators and mm-hmm. got more like CX roles and you're in charge of the renter experience. Like, we have great new roles that are being invented that are so vital. And I love to see that movement in the industry. So the conversations that have really happened really positively for us are coming more from those types of inquiries and those in the business that are focused on that entire renter journey. And like, how do I improve this from point A to point Z and mm-hmm. keep them there? That's what leads to.
Well, there's a lot of room to move. Like it's completely blows my mind that in a recurring revenue business, 50% turnover is acceptable. And I think that, there are life changes that happen. Like, there's a guy on the stage today talking about he's moved 20 times, right? Like, but not every single time was just because of personal choice. And he's able to move. So he's able to, he himself, his narratives, he was able to move very quickly. And so changing apartments just for the sake of price is not unusual for him.
Right.
Right. So that was kind of like, that was an interesting conversation because I would think that moving would be dreadful. But once you've moved it, I guess, a handful of times, it's pretty straightforward.
I've done, I think I did 4 times in 1 year, one time.
Oh my.
I dread moving as well. There is a point where it becomes so like the price differential can be pretty huge with the amount of specials that are out there.
Yeah.
I really push against trying to use those too heavily.
Well, you can compete on price. If you compete on price, you're in the price. You're it's a race to the bottom in every single situation.
Yeah.
So how do you differentiate? And this is kind of why you guys are, if you don't seek to differentiate, you're destined to compete on price, period. And so, you guys are changing that by being able to even articulate the differentiations, like we talked about the gym and all of your different amenities, instead of a bullet point list of, hey, we've got da 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 da. It's like, this is how this can change your life.
Right. And or something as simple as just like, you say you're pet friendly, mm-hmm. show it.
Right.
Show me pet. I haven't seen a pet. I haven't seen a person.
Right.
Your website.
Right? Right.
We show empty spaces. Like, we're selling space. But in the end, like, ultimately.
Spotify, or if you could do, what was that?
I'm just seeing a note here.
Oh, why the sound went? Oh, maybe we touched that. We'll find out. Otherwise, listen to us on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. Like, follow, subscribe. Any comments or ratings there, they're always helpful. And thanks for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Grady.
Appreciate it. Thanks for this in person. It was awesome.
This was fun.
All right. Take care. Cheers, everybody.
Well, I sure hope that didn't happen.